Boom, here we go. All right. So, you know, in NLP, we talk about timelines, right? But as we get started, even before we talk about timelines, many people right now have talked about they feel out of sorts. They're out of touch. It just doesn't seem right. They're, you know, time doesn't mean much or whatever. I mean, there's some stuff going on that it's hard to put words to, because it's hard to put words to things that are undescribable. Especially, you know, if you go through an undescribable event and then someone asks you to describe it, there's no words for it, especially if it's a feeling. And then you're putting intellectual words onto feelings, which may or may not match. Then, of course, we get into the whole, I should have put a slide up, the whole NLP, delete, distort, and generalize. I may say one thing, meaning, because that's what that feeling means to me, and or that's my word for it. But that word is something totally different from you, for you. So we get all this other stuff, right? But anyway, in timeline, let me introduce timeline, because it's all going to come together here. You know, in NLP, we have timelines, right? That we have in time and through time people, right? And all it means is it's how you sort and use time. It has nothing to do with time management or any of that. It's just how you sort and use time in your mind. I don't teach this that much, especially at the basic level. I just kind of introduce it. A lot of people really get into it. It's useful in some contexts, I think, but you know, I teach a little bit more in the master level, because then you can do some techniques with timeline. But it's kind of like, do you imagine your life? Do you kind of see through time? Or are you in time? You know, and the easiest way we could describe it for hours, but the easiest way is a quick demo for yourself in case you haven't done it lately. And again, remembering right now you're kind of in student mode or you're in learning mode. So your timeline may be different by what you're doing, right? Your timeline may be different by what you're doing. But if you would close your eyes and imagine like today, right where you are right now, if you just kind of imagine today. You know, let's say go back a little while, so it's still today, but you got up, you got ready, and you're thinking, I'm doing this seminar, I'm doing this webinar today. So you kind of imagine today. Great. Now if you kind of let your mind go clear and you think back a few weeks ago, right? Let's say before all this lockdown happened, and you think about something you did then. Maybe you were, I could think about getting ready to go to this, I had to give a talk to a group in Tampa. So I could picture getting ready to go to that. So now I have something from, and that was early March. Great. Now, if you let your mind go clear, now you think about what are you going to be doing in August? Some people will be going to HypnoThoughts, a hypnosis conference. Maybe you got different seminars. Maybe a lot of people take holiday in August, whatever it is. So imagine something in the future, right? So you have today, you have something in the past, you have something in the future. Now, if you imagine all three at the same time, they'll take some kind of spatial arrangement. Great. Now open your eyes. Now, if you did the exercise, now some people, you know, their past is off to one side. Their today, if you will, is kind of like right here, but it's out in front of them and their future's off into the future. So you kind of can see through time. Now, for some people, the past is behind them. They're in the moment, and their future is either up in front. It might be up a little bit or out in front, whatever. And then we have people that it's kind of in between. But the biggest difference is does the line go through you? Are you in today? If you are, that's more of an in-time experience as opposed to a through-time experience. We have all, you know, we all have these experiences, right? But we always forget that they change, you know. Some things are in-time experiences, right? Like sports, dancing, performing, singing, dancing, acting. Those are you're in the moment, and performers talk about it. If you're a good dancer, if anybody here is a good dancer, if Miss Deborah is a good dancer, right? She gets into it. She's dancing. You know, you're not thinking about anything, right? You're into it. The music's, and people say that it's flowing through me, you know, as opposed to people that aren't good dancers. I call it the white guy middle-aged shuffle, where they sit there and go like this, right? Until they have a few drinks, then they're woo and this and that. So, but certain things are in time. Again, sports, dancing, performing, sex. Hopefully sex is an in-time experience, right? Hopefully it's in time. Hopefully you're there. Right? And as adults and all as change agents, and we're therapists and things, if we're going to talk about that with sex, many times any kind of sexual dysfunctions, one of the biggest is you can't get into it. That's what people say. I don't know. I just can't get into it. Right. And it just means your mind doesn't shut off for you to get in touch with your body. In time experiences, you are in your body. You're in it. You know, you can still keep track of time, but you're in the experience. Addictions is an in time experience, right? When you're, whatever the addiction, alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, porn, whatever, you're in the moment. Now, some addictions, especially alcohol and drugs, they chemically change your brain. That's why, like, they call alcohol the social lubricant. It shuts off the prefrontal cortex and you do stupid things. You don't have to be an addict. If you have a few drinks or you smoke a joint or you take a pain pill, you might do stupid shit. But it, because it puts you in the experience, it puts you in your body. So some experiences are in time. Some experiences are through time, right? You plan, you work, school, right? Our culture, our current work culture is set up in through time. You know, you have a time to be at work. You usually have, you might have scheduled breaks, scheduled lunchtime, scheduled quit time, right? And you kind of know how long it takes you to get to work. So you're late, your day is kind of laid out in front of you. And we'll say that, I've laid my day out. What does that mean, right? As opposed to people that are in time, they go, I don't know, I'll see what happens. We'll see what comes up, you know? So, but you change. And most of us learn to flip. Go from in time to through time, right? We could get stuck. If you get stuck in being through time, you can't have fun. You can't relax. You can't get into anything. You're constantly planning. If you're totally in time all the time, you have a tendency to run late. You lose track of time. You know, you lose track of time. You run late for everything. It's not that you mean to run late. It's just you're in the moment, so you're not thinking about the past or the present. And what happens, children are naturally in-time experiences, you know? Those of us who ever raised kids, you ever had that wonderful experience, you tell your kids you got a half hour to get ready and you go off, and let's say they're, you know, 8 or 9, so they're starting to be able to keep track of time, and you come back and they're still sitting there playing, and you lose your mind, right? Didn't you see the clock? Didn't you do this? We got to get ready to go. So we're moving them from being through-time kids and the experience, native cultures are through-time, right? Or in time, rather. Native cultures are in time, and we're pushing them through time, right? So they can see through time, right? So this is what, so we just naturally do this, right? And there's certain things we could do, right? And I'll get to some uses of timeline in a moment, right? But it's going to tie into what I really want to talk about. But one of the things that happens for people that are used to working in an office, in a structured environment, whether it's a factory, your office, whatever, suddenly, in the last few months, if you start working from home, it's why people felt out of context. It flips your time, right? Because many people, their work life is very through time, right? They're like, they got their day planned. And then when they get home, they can relax a little bit and they're in time. They watch TV, play with the kids, play with the dogs, do whatever. Now you're trying to balance going back and forth because you're working from home, right? So it's just interesting, right? So, you know, you could elicit people's timelines. What's your past? What's your present? What's your future? Now, it leads to a lot of interesting things we could do with hypnosis and NLP techniques. And you could formally take people back into their past, have them go into their timeline and go back into their past and see an event that happened in the past or re-experience an event, right? It's easy to do, right? Or you could take them into the future and create a future event. So we could constantly go back and forth. One of the interesting questions that comes up when I teach this is when people create a future event in their mind, so they're visualizing, create a visualization, it's never the same as a true memory. So let's say you want to visualize buying a new car. So, you know, you think about, did you ever buy a car? Yes. Okay. Think about the last car you bought. Okay. Now step into that experience, right? And people will step into it. And every person's, our submodalities of it, how we represent it will be different. Maybe you're in your head, you're in your body, you're holding the steering wheel. You can smell the new car smell if it's new. You could hear the engine. You're in it, right? Or you're signing the papers to pay for it, all this other stuff, whatever it is. So you're in the experience. great. And then you're going to create the visualization of you buying your new Porsche and you're sitting in it. But automatically it's like, oh yeah, I can see myself sitting in it. You disassociate, right? I can see myself signing the papers. I can hear myself talking to the sales manager, as opposed to the real memory, I'm talking to the manager as I see myself. Actually, that's your brain keeping you sane, because your brain goes, this event has not happened yet. So it doesn't want to make it exactly like the past. Now, some people, when they create a visualize or use the secret or law of attraction, somehow they're able to go into the future and create a future memory, not a visualization. It's a future memory. It has to be exactly like the past memory, right? It's kind of like, I've seen people when they have a success, you know, they buy that new car, right? They finally buy that new car. Now it's easier for them to visualize and step into buying the next new car because they have a real memory of what it was like, right? There, you guys, a lot of your memories will be over here. So they have a real memory. So when I'm thinking about buying that Porsche, you know, I bought a car and I bought trucks. Yes. So it's easy for me to actually step into, yes, I'm, you know, I heard a guy that really talked about it. What he would say is he would have people go, okay, what kind of car do you want? And they imagine it, or tell him, okay, now you got to go to the dealership, sit in that car. And so it's a real experience. There's your hands. You can hear, start it up, hear the motor. You know, if for my case, it'd be a sports car probably. So I can hear the motor. I can feel, I can smell it. So then when I visualize it, it's more real. It's not disassociated. I heard an actor talk about it, where as soon as he got that first part, you know, a good part in a television thing, he could easily picture himself becoming a series regular. You know, it took him 2 years to get that first good part where he was, you know, on a TV show with headlines and a credit, and, excuse me, multi-day shoot. But then once he did that, he goes, then I knew I could do the other. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. So if you're going to create future events, they got to be just like a past event. Maybe this is why, if you've made six figures, if you made $100,000 in your practice, you could imagine it's easier for you to step into a future memory of making $150,000 or $200,000. If you've never made $60,000 or $70,000, it's hard to picture $200,000. The money's not real to you, right? But if it's wherever you're at, one guy teaches it called incremental growth steps for visualization, right? Which is you have to experience, you find a memory of it, and then you just increase it by 10 or 20% because your brain can understand that. You know, if you're 100 pounds overweight and you haven't worked out in 20 years, and you can't walk up a flight of stairs, and suddenly you're 40 years old and you say, I'm going to be a bodybuilder. That's a hell of a jump, right? But if you might be able to step into imagining losing 10 pounds or 20 pounds and go from that to the next, to the next, to the next. Joe Vitale talks about that, right? How he visualized in steps to get to when he went to a bodybuilding competition and a strongman competition. You know, he knew he couldn't go from, you know, working 16 hours a day, sitting in front of the computer, eating candy and drinking coffee to, you know, going to a bodybuilding competition. So anyway, but that's timeline. How can you use it? You could go back in the past and see memories from your past and rewrite them, change them, you know. In NLP, we call it change personal history or reparenting, right? A lot of the traditional hypnotists will go back to an initial sensitizing event. Right? Or a whatever they call it. I don't believe that much in it, so I can't really talk about it. I mean, because, yeah, you know, but you might have an event that warped your path, you warped your life, so you can go back and visualize it or step into it. You can go over your timeline and see it. There's all this stuff. We could do more seminars on timeline, and maybe I will if people want. But it's just like how your brain sorts and uses time, right? Quick story. I was working with a lady. I tell this story a lot because it kind of sums it up. She was about, at the time, this is many years ago, she was, because I still lived up north, so, and I've been in Florida 22 years. So, but she was a weight loss client, And suddenly she started having anxiety attacks. Some of you have heard this story. And she couldn't put her finger on it. She was a senior vice president of a bank, of a small bank. And suddenly she had anxiety attacks. She got had to go to the hospital a couple of times. So she calls me up and goes, "Doc, I think I'm crazy. Can you help me?" I said, "Sure." So she comes in. We start talking. I said, "What's going on?" I thought maybe she started eating again. She goes, no, but she goes, "I've had these anxiety attacks at work and I end up at the hospital." So we start talking about it and I'm gathering information. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And she goes like this, "I know it's not this, Doc, but now you had to pay attention." You know, she goes, "These anxiety attacks always happen at, you know, at night," because she was working late, because her and her boss, the president of the bank, they were working on some kind of merger. The bank was being bought by a bigger bank. And she goes, "I can tell you that because, you know, I couldn't say anything about it, like I would know anything about bank mergers, but because it was with her boss." And at night, I said, "Okay." And I'm like, I'm just thinking, like, what's going on? And she goes, "You know," and her hands did this, right? If you can see me, she goes, "When I was 16, and her, she goes, she was working at an ice cream parlor. And she goes, "One night, you know," or the owner's son, this one of the rich guys, it was a small town she grew up in, you know, he owned the ice cream parlor, a couple of things. Her, the guy's son was home from college. So he was, you know, in college, she was in high school. And so they're working at the ice cream parlor all summer. And they started flirting and doing stuff and making out. And anyway, one night after work, after they locked up and they're cleaning up, he ends up raping her. Right? They were making out. She said, "Stop. No." And I go, "Okay." And she goes, I go, "What'd you do?" She goes, "Well, nothing. I couldn't do anything." You know, it was like either like the early 1970s. She goes, "If I would have accused him, everyone would have accused me of trying to catch a rich guy. Or why are you doing this? You want, you know, because he's rich and you're, you know, from the other side of the track." So she just buttoned her lip and just plowed through it. But she goes, "I knew I'd never let that happen again." So now fast forward, like, you know, roughly 40 years, and she's working with this guy, her boss, and it's at night. And as soon as that happened and all the other employees left, she started getting this anxiety attack. And I'm like, wow, you know, it was her brain taking care of her, right? Because I said, "Now, when you think about that event from working in the ice cream parlor," she goes, "Yeah, in a weird way, it and her hand went up like this. It goes, she goes, it kind of, it's always right there. It colored my world. So it was like, it wasn't in any kind of timeline. It was right here to protect her. So if she ever got in a dangerous situation, it would get her out, right? And it, that's why she was having the anxiety attacks." I said, "Well, that's your brain taking care of you. That's the good news. Bad news is, if you don't fix this, you could really literally have a real heart attack, because your brain will say, I'm getting you out of here no matter what. So I will throw you into arrhythmia and make you, you know." So we went in, we looked at the memory. She actually did it on her own. I was just talking to her. And she kind of put the memory back to when she was in high school and put it where it needed to be. And she did a couple other safety things, worked fine. So that's timeline. So whatever your timeline is, it is, right? So you have in time, through time, you know, kind of in between time. And it kind of ties into what we're doing today, what's happening today with all these people out of time with this lockdown mode going on, right? And it's there's a thing called dyschronometria. And it's dysfunction, chrono, time, metria is measure. You have a dysfunction of time measurement in your head. Classic dyschronometria is based brain damage, right? It's ataxia. There's been some kind of brain dysfunction and your cerebellum's been damaged somehow, either permanently or temporarily. And so you lose your ability to track time. Time doesn't matter to you, right? If it's permanent, these are the people that can't remember time. You could go and Google, there's a classic study of a guy who could not create any new memories. He might have passed now, but it'd been 20 or 25 years, he still couldn't create a new memory. Right? It would literally have to repeat everything, right? His brain would not create new memories. He had no time marker. And of course, classical amnesia is you have no past, right? It's kind of specific because you don't forget how to walk, talk, eat, do those things, but it's an ataxia. That's your brain not working right, right? And by the way, COVID-19 mimics ataxia. And one of the things that happens sometimes with some ataxia is you appear drunk, you slur your words, you can't talk right. And again, you can't track time, you lose track of time. And that's one of the things they say about this COVID-19, but all flu does it. If you ever had a really bad flu, you can slur your words, you lose track of time, right? But the biggest thing with this is time doesn't matter, right? And is that what we're going through today? Is this part of the issue, right? There was a man named Block, and he had identified four factors that provide a context in which psychological time is perceived, right? One is characteristics of the time experience. Is it in a certain place at a certain time? We have these events that happen certain place, certain time, right? And so we begin to sort those time experiences. And that can create time-related behaviors in judgment. You have time-related behaviors at work in judgment that you may not do at home, right? And then you get the contents of a time period, and you'll put them in a certain content, the content of a time period. And you have certain contexts of time, right? And then you have certain activities during a time period, right? So this is how we sort and use time. Great, right? It's just the way we're set up. And especially in the Western world with schools, again, we take kids out, now we're putting them into these time experiences. You know, the behavior at school and the judgment at school is hopefully going to be different than when they're on the playground with their friends. So we're teaching them to get the behaviors and the judgments based in a time context and content, right? And certain activities in certain time periods, right? You act differently depending on what's going on. It's just what we do. And once we learn it, it becomes subconscious. It goes to that unconscious competent phase in our brain so we could just do it without thinking, right? So what happens with time shifts, right? Lost time events, like the lady where it was a super strong event, like a trauma, right? It'll go out of time, you know? If you've had children, the birth of your children is usually a out-of-time experience. You can remember it like it's today. It's right here, right? Sounds cold, but especially your first child, right? Because everything's new when it happened, being in the, you know, whatever it was. So it's there, right? And you'll say it's just like it happened today. This is just like yesterday, right? And you might want to call those lost time events, out of time events things. And then we can get into like Groundhog Day, if you remember the movie Groundhog Day, right? Where he's stuck in a time loop. Every day's the same, right? And a lot of us get that way with our jobs, with our relationships. I mean, it's like, you know, time to make the donuts, time to make the donuts, right? We get stuck in these things, right? And then we can have events where there are no time markers. You lose track of time because there's no time markers, right? And that'll throw you into being in time. A really good movie, you know, if you ever watched a really good movie that's long, you lose track of time. There's no time markers. You're like, whoa, that was quick. And then you look at your watch. You go, wow, that was over 2 hours, you know? Whatever it is, right? And these kind of things, these lost time events, Groundhog Day kind of thing going on, no time markers, causes a type of false dyschronometria, right? Or pseudo dyschronometria, right? Because time does not matter. Right now, this leads to what really I want to talk about, this what we're going through now with this lockdown, right? I call it lockdown lost time, right? And we're beginning to see it where a whole swath of the population is experienced post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Even though they didn't get the flu, maybe nobody actually they knew got the flu, right? But they're experiencing it. So they have post-traumatic stress disorder with all of the markers of post-traumatic stress disorder. Can't sleep, can't eat, da-da-da-da-da, right? And as I said earlier, working from home is one of the things, if you had a pretty set work schedule, that's taken away. Even if you're working from home, it flips your time. Kind of, that throws you out of lost, it puts you in lost time, right? And so I started thinking about this because I was talking to a couple people about it, because same thing with post-traumatic stress, we're seeing a rise in suicides, we're seeing a rise in domestic violence, we're seeing a rise in addictions, you know, shooting back up, which we've always had addiction problems, but they're going up because people are under stress. It's a way to self-medicate, right? So here's some examples, right? I'll tell one of my prison stories. I just like setting it up that way. When I was in prison, sounds good, but I was the clinical director of a psych unit for a prison, and I worked in a couple other jails and prisons as a psychologist. But one of the things the inmates talk about is time doesn't matter, right? Especially people with long sentences, right? Especially the ones that may not ever get out. They have life without the possibility of parole. I don't know if there's truly a study, but I read that inmates that are sentenced to life without the possibility of parole in states where that is actually true and they're never going to get out, die much, much quicker. You know, one of the things I noticed working at the prisons I worked at and talking to other guys that worked in prison, you don't see a lot of old inmates in prison, right? The Shawshank Redemption is not true. You don't see all these old guys in jail. And caveat or full disclosure, most people commit crimes in their teenage years or early 20s, maybe into their maybe 30s. And so even if they get a 10-year sentence, they're out in their 40s, right? So they're not in jail, right? And again, if you're even in your 20s and you get life without the possibility of parole, prison is the most stress, one of the most stressful places on the planet, right? That it's, there's no safety anywhere in a prison. You're the food's horrible, everything's bad, right? And then if you take away hope or the possibility of parole, you know, and even some of the wardens that talk about reforming criminal justice, when you take away the possibility of ever getting out, A, they're much more violent in jail, and B, they don't live that long. They're, what do you want to be an 80-year-old inmate in a 6x8 cell, and you know with a window that big for the rest of your life? So anyway, so you get prison. They lose track of time. Time doesn't matter. Here's a good story, right? I was talking to my daughter. She was in the Navy for a long time, almost 11 years, and she did a couple of deployments. And usually deployments are like 4 to 6 months, very structured. You know when you leave, you know when you're coming back, right? So she said, you know, the first couple of deployments, time mattered. You know, if you were a month in, that meant you had 5 months left. Follow me on this. This is cool, right? And I go, yeah, that makes sense. She goes, yeah, so time mattered. You know, you could count down the days. People had the calendar up. And you also had port calls. So, okay, we're a month in. In a week or two, we'll have a port call somewhere. We can get off the ship and, you know, party and do the things that sailors do. Great. Well, then my daughter was in the Navy aboard the USS Nassau. They call it a Gator freighter. It took Marines to combat when the war started, the war in Iraq. And so when they deployed, it was the first time since World War II, they had an open deployment, what they call. They were leaving, they had no idea when they were coming back, they had no idea if they were gonna get any port calls, and if they did pull in to refurbish stores of the ship, they had no idea if they could get off the ship. It was like World War II. They were deploying for how long? I think my daughter said they were at sea 278 or 288 days at sea. And when I say that, please, people, do not confuse a Carnival Cruise Lines with a U.S. Navy warship at war, right? And so she goes, it was horrible because everybody on the ship, she kind of said they lost track of time, you know, because time didn't matter. They didn't know when they were coming back. They knew they were going to come back. They just didn't know when. You know, they went to Iraq, then they went to Afghanistan, and to drop Marines off there, and then they were serving as a hospital ship, yada yada yada. So She goes, you know, we had that experience where time didn't matter, right? The other kind of time where you get thrown out of it, so you have prison, you have like that kind of thing, is a lot, for a lot of people, when you go on vacation, right? The first couple of days of vacation, many people feel lost because there's no structure. And then, of course, you get the people that, you know, their vacation, it looks like an airline schedule. You know, well, at 8 o'clock, we have to be here, you know, because at 3 o'clock, we're doing the bungee jump. And then at 6 o'clock, we're having dinner. I mean, they schedule it. But if you have a vacation, it can throw you out of time. I see it here in Florida where people retire because they've lost their time structure. They have no, you know, they don't know what to do. Days don't matter. They know time, but it doesn't matter. They can know like, okay, it's Saturday, but for the first time in 40 years, that doesn't mean anything. You know, because usually on Saturday, we cut the grass, we do this because I worked at the steel mill or the office. Now I know time, but it doesn't matter, right? And people that got used to this, especially like people in retirement, I've seen it here in Florida. I don't know if anybody else experienced it. But, you know, with social media, a lot of people going like, keep the lockdown going. It was people that were used to this kind of schedule, being at home, not going anywhere, not doing anything. You know, I always say, I always notice the people say, keep the gyms closed and don't open the movie theaters or the restaurants. If you start talking to them, they never went to the gym, they never went to the movies, and they rarely went to restaurants. They had no skin in the game. And those of us that like the gym, like the movies, and like going to restaurants, we lost something. It's easy to give up stuff you don't use. I mean, you know, but maybe that's why some people sort of like the lockdown. And the joke was, well, my life really didn't change. You know, but if for those people, your life was totally upended, it got interesting, right? And this can kind of throw you into post-traumatic stress, right? When you're in a combat deployment, there's always constant threat. You're isolated from your support network, right? You're away from home, your friends and family. Yeah, you're with your brothers in arms if you're in a combat deployment, but you're isolated from other things, right? So if you think about this, what's happened when they started the lockdown in March here in the States, it was like a combat deployment and it was constant threat. Right? Constant threat. You're going to die. You're going to die. COVID's going to kill you. It's going to kill your family. You know, and it was unceasing. And then because of the lockdown, don't go anywhere. Don't associate with people. Well, you had a small network, maybe your family. But what about all the people? I've had a lot of people I know down here. They're alone. But they're supposed to be isolated. So you cut off their social network was like either playing golf, going to AA meetings, people I know anyway, or restaurants, that's gone. So now they're in total isolation, right? And then people say, yeah, but social media. Great. But what happens in social media? You self-select into groups that, you know, you don't have a broad base connect, and it's not a true connection, it's a social media connection, right? And so we're in isolation, right? We're under constant threat. And especially when it was like mid-April or early April, when they were trying to get everybody and people weren't really doing it. And then they hit the idea that, you know, you're going to die alone. You're going to die alone. Your family will die alone. And then they showed the horrible videos of people passing away and they can't even FaceTime their family, you know, which the idea of dying alone is a deep, deep fear, and then people fell in line. Also up the constant threat mode, right? And so again, now we're forced into isolation. Time doesn't matter. And you don't have, you're not with the people that usually support you, right? And not just your family, but friends, coworkers, things like that. You've lost all that, right? So now you're in that where time doesn't matter. Days don't matter. Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, who cares? I'm, you know, if I'm working from home, I'm just doing what I do. A lot of people couldn't work from home. And that's where, you know, when people say they see that 1,000-mile stare in combat veterans, have you seen that in people running around here? You know, I do when I see people with the mask and the gloves. You know, I was just at the store the other day, and the person with the mask, goggles, gloves, and you could see their eyes. They had a combination terror, thousand-mile stare, right? That thing. And what's happened is you've had lost meaning. And that's what happens with post-traumatic stress. Things don't mean anything, right? And it's almost like you got no future. And then they kept talking about this shit's never going to end. It's coming back. There's going to be another wave, more constant threat, no future. We should just prepare for this to happen off and on forever, right? And then they wonder why people are killing themselves, why they're drinking, while they're taking pain pills, right? So large parts of the population have PTSD. Actually, it's complex post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Because they have no future. They lost, a lot of people lost jobs. Those jobs may not be coming back. There's no support network. Some of the escapes that we always had, the gym, the movies, the restaurant, are now they're coming back, right? And so people maybe for the first time in their life are experiencing post-traumatic stress, right? And I really started thinking about doing this a couple weeks ago. I was talking to somebody who did a couple of combat deployments. And they said, you know, once this really started, they felt strangely comfortable. I go, what do you mean? They go, it's kind of like being, you know, it's like being back in the sandbox, man. You know, it's like there's a threat. You don't quite know who the threat is, you know, especially you don't have a you know, like World War II, you had clear-cut enemies. This was, you know, if you're in like these, some of the combat situations, you don't know friendly from a foe, kind of like going to Vietnam, right? So there's constant threat. And then we painted it on the people that don't, that have the audacity not to wear a mask or you know, not to share in the social fear. Oh my God. So it's like, and there's no future. You don't know when it's going to end, right? And he goes, I just felt strangely comfortable, you know, because he did the combat tours. It was in his head. Right? He began to experience that dyschronometria, right? So how do you fix this? How can we help people, right? Well, if this is true, it could be a problem of out of time. You're out of your normal timeline, you know? Maybe you're through time at work, you're very organized, right? And when you used to come home from work, you were in time, or you had certain in time experiences you would do. You would work out, you'd go to the gym, you'd play golf, you'd do dance class, whatever it was. Well, that's gone. So now you had no in time experience. Maybe you're stuck through time, constant, right? Constant threat coming in, right? And now if you're trying to work from home, if normally your home time was, you were in time, you know, hey, relax, play with the kids. Now it's like you had to develop that, right? And so there's no time markers either. It's not like necessarily for some people, especially when it first happened and you weren't working from home yet or things weren't happening, there were no time markers. Monday didn't mean much different than Thursday, right? So you have to help people reset their clock and explain that, you know, it's like you're out of time, you know, in your mind, you know. You have to find new meaning so time can mean something, right? Try to keep, that's why you've heard people somewhat say, set a schedule, you know, and at least do a few things on schedule if that was what you normally did, right? I kind of knew this and was talking to some people. So right when it started and they closed my health club, I started doing workouts at home. And I know I needed to do it quickly, because if I didn't, I would fall into that pattern of not doing it. And I needed some kind of, a marker there, something I could see that I knew I was going to do. So every day I would work out, you know, thank God for YouTube. And like I was doing Tai Bo, I really enjoyed it. You know, kept me going. Right. And I had to find a new meaning. Okay. I can take this as a time to do this, this, and this. Right. And then we need to help people set for new markers of what the time is and what the meaning is. So if you explain this to people, it begins to make more sense. Right. And this experience of how your dyschronometria, you know, that you're having this inability in your brain to track time the way you've normally tracked time, right? because those markers are gone, 8 to 5, 9 to 4, whatever. If you had work hours, if you had certain things you did, once those left, it's like, right? And so, you know, and it has become somewhat, I've heard people say, it's like Groundhog Day. Nothing's changing, right? So it's one of the things we could do. And people talk about, like, it's like we're in prison. You know, I use the term house arrest, you know, but that's what I do. I don't call it safer at home. I'm a linguist. I'm very comfortable with it. I don't call it social distancing or any of that. I call it forced isolation, because I understand how humans are supposed to work. You know, and yeah, I've just seen certain things, right? That's me. And that helped me sort the thing and to disregard the threat, right? And explain that it's like this constant threat mode. The closest I've seen it happen was the terrorist attack of 2001, September 11, 2001. People experienced this across the country, but especially the people that lived in New York. Obviously, they were attacked, and around Washington, D.C., and the bigger cities, especially on the East Coast, right? They had more of it than other parts of the country. And it kind of went from New York and Washington, D.C., and then Boston, Philly, and then the other big cities like Chicago, Detroit, you know, because they were targets. But as you got out, you know, west, there wasn't as much of a threat. So their response was different, right? And maybe that's what's happened. You know, so when people are experiencing this and we're seeing it, it could be why we're seeing a back pressure. Is that the right word I want? That with all the social unrest going on now, with the George Floyd killing and the guy in Georgia and all that, which is, it's been going on forever. First, you know, is this worse? No, it's being recorded. That's all. But, you know, because now for like 60 days, give or take a little bit, maybe more, right? This pressure has been building and there's going to be a natural explosion, right? And you're seeing people, that's what's surprising. Some people that normally wouldn't protest are out protesting. Places that normally you don't see protests, you're seeing protests, small towns in the Midwest, small towns out west, down south, that, you know, not just the people that it directly affects, the people of color, other people are protesting, right? Because it's maybe it could be a buildup here and it's gonna, you know, it's just there. But if you explain all this, it kind of makes sense going back to if they've experienced this. So it could be why people are eating more, using more alcohol and drugs, domestic violence, depression, suicide, all these things are going up. And they're going to get worse because once you get out of the combat situation and the PTSD sets in, you have to reset, right? And so what's going to happen is people will try to reset, especially if they're trying to reset and there's no future. One of the things they saw after Vietnam, especially, or when troops come back from combat, if they go back to a good environment where they have like work and support and all that, they have less post-traumatic stress disorder. They get back into the groove easier and they don't experience the addiction issues and the violence issues and that. They get back into normal. Those that come back to no hope, right? The inner cities and places like now, like what's going to happen there is, okay, the factory's closed, the restaurant's not coming back, the movie theater's not opening. So all these things are disappearing. So, you know, that subgroup had more addiction, violence, all these other things. So we can help people adjust to it. So I try to be respectful of time. Does that make sense to everybody? I'm going to open it up for questions and comments. Okay. I'm going to stop the recording and then open it up for questions, comments, things like that. Let me stop the recording.